Hello, good people, and welcome to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. I am Jamil Graham, your host, and today is Saturday, the second moon, the sixth day in the first year of our renewal. In January the 28th, 2012, in the Gregorian calendar, which I personally have decided to phase out. The Alchemy of Light broadcast is a celebration and exploration of consciousness, because consciousness is the juice of creation. It is everything that we feel and think. And today, my guests, I am so excited about bringing to all of you an extraordinary being. She is somebody who is an example of walking your talk. She is a gifted intuitive who has been following her soul path from the beginning. It wasn't really a choice for her, you might say, in my personal opinion. She is a trusted friend of the Dolphin and Whale Nations, the Syrian Nations, and an outstanding contributor to the betterment of humanity here on planet Earth at this time. She has written an outstanding book recently called Before We Leave You, Messages from the Great Whales and the Dolphin Beings. And we're going to be visiting this book, and who knows where the muse will take us. Welcome, Patricia.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, perhaps you could offer in brief to our listeners just a little bit about how you came to be in how you came to be a channel, and what does channeling mean for you, and how do you define that when you are sharing your work with the I call the Syrian Nations, it's I guess my indigenous blood, but whatever your term, however you say that, would be really appropriate to introduce to the listeners just a little bit about your journey and how channeling works for you, and then we can get into the book and the message.
Okay. This word channeling has been so abused and misused of late that I'm afraid I like to stand back from it a little bit. I really never wanted to be a medium in my life experience of spiritual questing. It just sort of happened, and I resisted it for a while, but having had an enormous experience in A Crop Circle, which has been elaborated in my books, I started to wake up to these messages, and they were quite intricate, and they were filled with information that I had no knowledge about, certainly not astrophysics and terms of that nature, and concepts that were very complex for me as more a right-brained person. So this was kind of a clue to me that whatever I was bringing forward was definitely coming through, and I honored it, and I started to produce these books for the beings that come through, who many of the people who know of my work will know are declared the Syrian High Council, and these are beings that exist and vibrate at the sixth dimensional level, or sixth density.
Okay, and then it was... I appreciate you clarifying that. I wanted to just put that into the conversation in a clear way to get started for all those reasons, to just really clarify. And the council, the High Council, the Syrian High Council, has a sort of department that channels or that communicates, that is, in fact, the ascended cetacean family, the dolphin and whales that have ascended themselves into the sixth dimension. They are part of the Syrian High Council Committee. Is that correct?
Yes, they call themselves the Cetacean Committee, and they sit on the High Council, but meaning that they represent the cetacean nation of all dimensions in space and time. And I just want to note that when you were just bringing me in, you said the title, Before We Leave You, and another voice said you, and you stopped for a moment as if you'd heard that.
I heard something. I did. And
yeah,
I was,
me.
Yeah. Was that you?
No.
Okay. So. We have friends.
Yeah, I thought it was beautiful that, you know, just at Before We Leave You. And I love the fact that you picked it up and you reacted to it and then went on. So I just, I'd like to remind people that when we talk about consciousness on many levels, it is not something that is far away from us or that we have to reach or climb to. It's all, every dimension is within and around us. And that little moment, I think, was a beautiful way to kick off our discussion about that very thing.
Well, that is a beautiful place to continue from, because being that we are multidimensional beings, your experience to me is very normal, that mm-hmm. you have been able to develop your interdimensional capacity to journey and commune in the higher dimensions, to me, is normal.
Yes, but the important thing is that we, when we do this work on these levels, we have to maintain the ground, because it's very easy to lose that balance between being a grounded, convincing light worker touching people's lives, and on the other hand, working on these higher dimensions and receiving so much really galactic information. So it's important to be able to run the energy all the way down into the ground and hold the grounding of this beautiful earth while we do the.
And what ways have you found to ground the profound messages? This is very important at this time, as the light is rising and more people are having interdimensional experiences, though they may not have the awareness of what that is in this particular context. But I really do see all around me that more and more people are having experiences. They're being contacted, and the grounding, you are so right, is the challenge. What ways have you found, could you offer, that would make it easier when you are receiving this amazing, profound experience, and then you need to come back to planet Earth and look around you and go, wow, that world isn't the same as where I just came from. Whoa, what's that?
Well, it is the same. It's just that we are so lost in the density of it and the illusion of it that we don't recognize how utterly multidimensional our three-dimensional reality is, because we try to find these terms, these linear explanation for these complex aspects. And so suddenly we're talking about 3D as this limited space and environment, and then aspiring to these other dimensions. And let us not forget that everything is woven in the impeccable fabric of reality. There, all the dimensions are woven into each other. So the first thing we need to do is to escape from the concept that 3D is limiting, and understand that the only limitation we have is that which we put upon ourselves.
Very well said. And the linking, the weaving is, I think, the medicine of this time.
Your question was, how do we ground? And the first thing to do is, I think it's important, is to take your ego out of it and to find, I just don't believe that a person could do any sort of real work on multidimensional transmission if their ego is in the way. So I pound and pound and pound on this, and so do the Sirian High Council. It's just like, check your ego, because unless you are you are clear that you are in service and that you are only a transmitter of higher dimension, then your work will be shut down. And so as channels, I think this is very important, because a lot of people are channeling, declaring to be channeling now. And I think it's important that they understand that the ego needs to be resolved and they need to be in humility. And that is very grounding.
Yes, it is.
Yes, that, of course, the work of every day. I do so much meditation every day. And a lot of it involves grounding myself, because I am working on these levels. And there are so many things going on in my reality that I have to be sure to keep working on grounding myself all day long. Mm-hmm. So I very strong, very quick, actually, grounding meditation, it doesn't take a long time. You just drop your anchor and hook it onto the beautiful Mother Earth and make sure that that connection is always made, that light cord.
That's a very nice vision from your little spaceship dropping an anchor. Hey, Mother Earth, here I come.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. Oh, well, I am wanting, let's go into a little bit about the Syrian High Council Committee, and then let's look at the message from before we leave you and the experience you've had with the dolphin and whale beings. Now, maybe we should just start there. Let's tell us about your experience with the dolphin and whale beings, because this book, Before We Leave You, in my opinion, is an absolute must read for anybody who is ascending in their interdimensional awareness. The messages that these incredible beings bring through Patricia in this book they're timeless, and they're extremely relevant to our, not only to our current situation, but they tease the psyche and awaken the psyche to the fact that we've been here a very, 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 very long time. And the Cetacean Nation carries with them our story and the richness of being able to tap into that to help us remember who we are. Because a big part of what is going on is we are remembering and in the process realizing how much we've forgotten. So I just can't recommend this book enough for anybody really serious about pursuing their deeper awareness of life, and anybody who loves anything about life in the sea or on land. So tell us about the work you do with them. How did you come to meet them? How did your journey with them in the water begin, and how did it come to this book?
For many, many years, I've been absolutely, as a child even, completely absorbed with dolphins and whales. Mm-hmm. And drawing as a child, and everything I could get my hands on, which of course wasn't that available to us in my childhood as it is now. So I knew that I was receiving information from otherworldly beings when I was a child, because my mother would tell me some of the wild things I told her as a kid, like the fact that I came from another dimension, another parallel universe, all these terms I used to lay on her at 4 and 5 years old. And fortunately, she was a beautifully expansive soul and allowed me that space. So I was compelled and fascinated by whales and dolphins, cetaceans, because they are so Syrian in their nature. They really resonate on that level of communication, and their work on this planet and others is to hold the oceans together with their music, with their song and their frequencies. So I finally got into a tank with my first experience was to get into a tank with a dolphin who was in trauma, and I was allowed to go in and swim with him. And instead of it being a touristic type of swim, I ended up doing a healing on this dolphin, because he swam right into my arms and let me work on him as a healer. And that was remarkable. And then I said, well, okay, unless I can be out in the wild with them, I'm never really going to have the experience I'm looking for. So knowing that my greatest fear in life was sharks, which is this primordial fear that I don't understand, I nonetheless jumped off a boat a few years ago into the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. Well, maybe not the middle, but certainly deep in the middle of the Atlantic. And I jumped in and had my first experience with wild dolphins. And then the rest is history. I mean, once you have that experience, I think you truly are never the same.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who has swum with dolphins in the wild knows exactly what I'm talking about. It is probably the most transformational, joyous, blissful experience you can have.
Mm-hmm.
And what's also interesting is they, sentinels come and they investigate you. And the first thing that they do is they run a sort of sound test on you by doing echolation, bouncing beams of bouncing sound off of you to determine who you are, what you are, and then I believe they do healing on you. And then you're welcomed into the pod. It's
really That's fantastic. In the book, you talk about the sound and the song and the sound before sound. And please elaborate on that. What is your experience of sound before sound? How does that work?
Well, this is their expression. It took me a little while to really understand what they meant. When they say sound before sound, meaning interpreted by a human as the vibrational aspect of the audible sound. In other words, by the time the ear hears sound, their entire bodies, their entire pods have experienced the sound in their bodies before they, as vibration, before they actually hear sound, if that makes sense.
Is that, would you call that a telepathic vibration?
Yes, it's something that the closest we can get to understanding as human beings, I think, would be the concept of telepathic reception. But what the dolphins explain is that it's more than that. It's not just a telepathic experience. It is the knowing of all things that exist, all sounds that vibrate in their environment. And they can tell by the density of the wave or the preliminary vibrational imprints of sound coming in, what sound is coming before they hear it.
Wow.
It's a little bit complicated for us because we don't think we experience things like that, but we actually do.
Yeah, I understand on my level. I think that thinking is not helpful. This is really a feeling thing, you know.
I give an example in the book of my dog, who is extremely bright, and she always can tell when my man is about 6 or 7 minutes from home on the way home. And it's not because it's every day at the same time, but set my clock to the moment that she jumps up on the couch and starts staring out the window and sort of growling. And I say, okay, exactly 6 minutes from now, he's going to be here. And I pose this question in the book. Is it because she can hear that well, that she can hear, recognize his car that many miles away? Is it telepathic? What is this experience that animals have that we are animals? So we do have that primordial capacity, but we seem to have so encapsulated ourselves with all of our mechanics and all of our insulation of so many levels that many people have lost that ability.
I really appreciate that example. And in a way, it's part of instinct that somehow got a bad rap in the social training. Like everything in our current existing paradigm that's, you know, shifting, is the essence of separation, the dire need to put everything in little boxes. So the idea that a intelligence somehow was separate from instinct seemed to be part of the science dogma, and I do mean dogma. We have a bunch of modern dogma called science out there right now that's just garbage, and I know there's some really good things in it, but really I feel like our work is now to find out what the good things are and get rid of the garbage, because it's mostly garbage, because it does things like make us think that instinct is not intelligent. And this is extremely intelligent and extremely useful. I mean, wouldn't it be intelligent to be able to recognize something really substantial happening in your species? Like the example of a tidal wave coming, and the recent one in Malaysia, and so many people, human beings, didn't know it was coming, but the animal beings surely did, and a handful of the indigenous cultures also. They knew to leave because they could. That was, I would say, that's an example of that. That sound before sound. They knew it was coming, and they. That is intelligence, right?
Yes, it is. I think it's really embarrassing almost for people to still be trying to separate intelligence from instinct, because the left and right brain exist together. Mm. So we use terms like I'm right-brained, I'm left-brained. And I do feel that if I had to explain myself in those terms, I think I even said it earlier, I do seem to be more, let's say, lean more to the use of the right brain, creative and intuitive mind. But still, that doesn't mean that I'm not capable of using my rational mind as well. And a lot of times I need the rational, analytical mind to put some structure in some of this experience. Let me give you an example. For those people that are listening that are truly clairvoyant, you know that there are times when you can barely discern what is a clairvoyant or a multidimensional experience, and what you're actually seeing. And it's even more difficult when it's clairaudience, so that you're hearing, and that is more insipid. You can't, sometimes you hear a voice and you don't know if you're really hearing it or not. And that's why a lot of people have ended up in mental institutions, because they're not crazy when they're hearing voices. They just haven't been able to put any form to it or to understand the process. That's a little bit off the track of what you were saying, but I do think that not all science is garbage. Fortunately, we have a lot of scientists now moving over to a greater understanding that everything is consciousness and wave and vibration, and they're moving away from some of the older, stuck, rigid concepts of what science is believed to be. Bear in mind that many of our scientists predominantly are funded by organizations that also choose the presidents and all the other characters that construct the ruling class of the planet. So a lot of them are constricted to have certain belief systems because that's how they get to keep working.
Yeah, I understand that. That is part of what modern science has been become part of the whole movement that has caged the human species, and in effect has made it much more challenging for us to become truly activated multidimensional beings in love with this multidimensional aspect of ourselves. And it's all part of the same thing, but claiming our consciousness frees everybody. Allows good science to emerge, and that's one of the blessings of the economic crash, because it will level the playing field. There's no doubt about that.
It definitely will do that. I mean, I look at this whole drama playing out about this economic crash that never has happened so far, and the fear that it creates, of course. Fear is how the power keeps us in submission. And I just cannot help but think that just anyone would say, that's easy for you to say. Anyone who is homeless or starving would say to me, that's easy for you to say, Patricia. But nonetheless, what I want to say is I cannot help but believe that it really is an opportunity for us all, because we have gotten so far away as a mass population from community. that we let people, we walk over people who have, who are lying on the street. This is reality in 2000. And I would like to think, I really truly hope that in this time of crisis, when more and more people are faced with true survival difficulty, that we will see a new community consciousness develop. It's starting already.
It most certainly is. And in the book, you talk about the nature of the cetaceans being community, unity, interconnectedness is basically their vibration, the one they know best. Is that accurate? Would you like to elaborate on how the cetaceans bring us messages on that level specifically? Because you are hitting it right on the head.
Well, they tell me that they exist on every dimension, and they are weaving sound and light through the, not only through the oceans of the earth, not only through the oceans of other planets. And by the way, of course, we're starting to finally hear that they're finding water on Mars and water on the moon, and that all the other planets have water too. Maybe not all of them, maybe not Mercury. But we've got Jupiter moon full of water, and the bottom line is planets are full of water. Mm-hmm. And this will be becoming more and more clear in our minds as the NASA and the teams prepare us more and more for contact. So we're hearing, I've seen pictures of Mars that are oceans. There are oceans in these pictures. And MarsAnomalyProject.com, I think, is the website. You can go there and look at the NASA's own pictures, and you will see unquestionable bodies of water.
Mm.
So there are, according to the beings that I'm hearing, there is water on countless planets. The whales and dolphins are ancient, ancient beings, and their work is to weave the sounds, the music, of the celestial being upon which they reside, and also to weave the vibrational essence of light and sound through the universe. So some people will say, but there's sound doesn't travel in a void, and that's not true.
Mm.
It's not true. The planets, all, if you ever heard of anyone talk about the music of the spheres, all the planets have their song. Everything vibrates in, and as they describe in the book, it's an orchestra, it's an opus, it's a symphony.
Mm. Mm. And in the song and in the weaving, I find such great example and teaching and a bridge for our own understanding of our multidimensional being, because when you step into the arena of more than a body, you know, more than just a material, amazing, beautiful creature to watch and play in water and all of our, you know, material understanding, and realize that that being is a part of the cosmos. That being has an interdimensional, multidimensional purpose in being that joyful, amazing creature that we are beholding. There's this whole other realm. And even if we aren't able to feel that in our conscious mind, just knowing that is the beginning. You know, just to visit that whole idea that you present, that they're sharing, just to visit that as a concept and really allow yourself to merge with that as an understanding, as a, even just a possibility. Go ahead and, you know, do the process. You must do the process. Does it work for you? Doesn't it? You know, enter that process of realizing that the beings, all of us, ultimately, we're not just walking bipods. We have humans, too, have multidimensional purpose through that reverberate throughout the entire cosmos. And these amazing beings, they just haven't forgotten who they are like we have, you know?
Yeah. I think there's one very poignant concept in this book is when they say, you take us from our pods, from our loved ones, and stick us in your circuses for your entertainment.
Mm.
And we ask you to consider if this was done to your children, your youth, would you still find this? If some alien species took your children and put them into the circus for some other species' idol entertainment, would you still find this to be so much fun and pleasurable? And I think about that. I have every intention to do everything I can to get more and more of these centers closed down. It's time we stopped treating animals like entertain, like clowns, and have them, in the case of the regal dolphins and the killer whales, as they're called, leaping through these hoops, playing games, showing, entertaining mindless viewers with their popcorn. I just can't stand it anymore. It is as if we have no perception. Well, I don't want to say we, that's general, many people do, but many people still have no perception of the dignity and the magnificence of these beings. In fact, many people have no idea of the magnificence and beauty of human beings or any other animals. But it's time to rally the forces here and start understanding our role in the greater reality of this earth and how important it is that we wake up and start making the changes we need to make.
And tell us a little bit about those ideas that are in the book, and also from your own work as an activist. You are in the process of putting together an organization called SaveEarthsOceans.org, and in the process of awakening to our dignity and who we are and what our purpose is. What is that in relation to the water and the ocean beings? Please share with us some things that would help us understand both how important we are and also how helpless we are not. What we actually do, how just being it matters, and being in conscious awareness of this actually does matter.
I decided that I wanted to throw myself into the cause of doing whatever we can to save the oceans, and in doing so, saving the life in the oceans, particularly the cetaceans and the turtles, who are all in extreme danger. And I look around and I still see the majority of people in denial about a lot of aspects of reality that surround us. It's like, we don't want to talk about that because the law of attraction will only bring us more of it. And I'm talking about the radiation in Japan, which is around the planet, and nobody wants to talk about it. And every day, more tons of radiation are being skewed into the ocean. I'm talking about the Gulf disaster, and nobody wants to talk about that either, and the damage that was done there. And this tendency that we have to not want to deal with very real, very urgent problems because we feel helpless to make change, that has to stop. Where do we find the balance between being activists and doing what we can to make change and trusting that the universe has the answer and knows what to do? And that is something that I work with all the time. And what I can say about that is, I was put on this earth to serve a purpose, and it doesn't mean I'm going to spend my life fighting to make change, but there's more to life than just, you know, going through your day, going through your work, eating dinner, and getting up in the morning. And eventually, the greatest satisfaction in life, in my opinion, is finding your mission. So I'm hoping to involve more people in joining me. It's SaveEarthsOceans.org is just being set up now. But my intention is to unite, first of all, more of the organizations that are working. Everybody seems to be working on their own projects in their own way. And there has to be unity there. So the organization is going to do what it can to help draw these others together. And then so many people, I'm blessed with having so many people who trust me and have asked me how they can help. So I'm going to raise funds and fund other organizations that are doing great work. I'm going to work on educating the children, creating materials for children that will help wake them up. And I want to get people cleaning up the beaches. I'm very ambitious here, but I will take it project by project and do what I can to make a difference.
Yay! because we can do that, you know? Right. And that ambition, those are the seeds. And once we begin, once we just make that commitment and then show up every day and surrender to what the work may need to be have us do. And, you know, we have to also have such a commitment that, you know, if we put our first three bricks down and then we have to take them all down because those aren't the right ones, we have to come back and put three new ones with even greater passion than the first three. You know, we really have to make that commitment and show up. It doesn't happen if you know, like I call it the remote control syndrome. You know how television controls people, and the remote control syndrome is, you know, this idea people have that creation happens when you push a button, right? You're sitting there all zoned and you're not using any of your senses. You're not using your amazing body. You're not using your amazing mind. You're just sitting there zoned and you don't like the channel. So I'm going to create something. I'm going to change it. I push a button. Wow, new channel. And, you know, I really think that's had an impact on what people believe is their capabilities. You know, and that I think it's had an impact on what people believe is process in creation.
Well, and you hit the head when you said the word passion. And I really believe that without passion, you can never have you can never find your mission. You can never really get out of that mentality of the remote as you're describing so eloquently, because passivity is a killer. And passion is the thing that takes you out of passivity and makes you reach for the stars. So I was raised with a mother who said, reach for the stars, baby. Go for the gusto. Go for broke. And she used to say things like, I remember when I was a pacifist during the time of the war in Vietnam. That'll give you an idea of my age. And I told my mother, we were sitting in at the administration hall, and we were going to lose all of our credits if we didn't leave the building. And I called her and said, what do you think I should do, Mom? I'm going to lose everything. And she said, baby, you only know what you believe in when you've got something to lose. Go for the stars. And I said, okay, I'm going to get 12 units of F then. And I'm staying. And I think that spirit has to return. We have to stop being so afraid of what they will do to us and what will happen. The power that they have, they meaning the forces that rule at the moment, and know that one voice can make a huge difference and millions of voices can change the world.
Absolutely, Patricia. God bless your mama. She's with us today. I am sure of that. Yeah. I am sure of that. And talk to us more about that. I think I'm a believer that the powers that used to be, I really see them in the fading light, because the game is over, really. And the new game is us finding ourselves and becoming passionate, joyful beings again and reclaiming our true mission, which is another thing that's really great. When I hear all these, you know, numbers, oh, it's 25% employed, I think that is 25% of people who have time to pursue their passion. What a tremendous gift to the planet Earth, you know, that people are being released from the shackles of boredom to find their passion again. And, you know, please talk to us a little bit about the, oh God, you know, to claim your passion and to find something of value when you're about to lose it. Can you elaborate a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, the thing is, anyone who's listening who is unemployed would probably think, well, how am I supposed to find my passion when I'm trying to feed my kids? And so I think that it's actually, how can I say this? When we are faced with obstruction and difficulty is when the human spirit gets moving. I'm convinced of this, as convinced as I breathe. As long as everything is easy and smooth and calm, we get very lazy and we get sloppy and we get tuned out and we just get really unplugged, let's say. Well, take out the word unplug, that has other connotations, but just passive and very allowing the world to happen to us. When we have obstruction, we have to get moving, or we starve to death, or we die, or whatever that obstruction is. In the case of homeless people with no, the rising poverty in America and everywhere else, people are faced with, yes, the possibility to discover their passion. For example, some people say, I always wanted to do art, and I think I'm kind of good at it, but I never could, and I'm going to go for it and start selling art and become very successful. So there's that opportunity arising from obstruction, but also the reality that when you see that you have got to put food on the table, you move or die. So in a way, these difficulties are very possible, very positive for the human spirit. And what I'm hoping we will see is, like you said, people who are out of the routine by force and starting to have to find creative ways to live, and a higher community consciousness of the way we're going to do this is helping each other. We have got to get back to community. So we don't look at a person who's lying on the street and walk over their body. This can't keep happening. So,
it can't. It cannot.
Just interject also, I'm seeing also that the animals are interacting in ways as if they're trying to teach us things. More and more species are mixing together. They're helping each other. There are more and more images of animals saving each other. I'm sure you saw the video of this jaguar, a lioness, who found a baby. She had lost her babies, died, and she found a baby antelope who had been abandoned by its mother. And she had this little antelope for 2 weeks until finally her clan attacked the antelope. But there are pictures of this lion lying with the lamb. We remember that metaphor from the biblical texts. Here is this lioness with her lunch lying in this tundra in Africa somewhere. For 2 weeks she was filmed. And I watched that and thought, wow, how amazing that what we're being shown here is that even the most wild animal instinct can have so much compassion that it can be risen above. And what are we to learn here?
Well, that really chokes me up. Let's take a leap from here to facing what we have been conditioned to believe is death. You know, and the dolphin and the whale people speak to us about why they choose to beach rather than suffer the killing drums, the encroachment on their space. And they know that they are eternal beings. And this is also another gift of our time, and also something that happens when we are faced with travail, when we are faced with, are we going to make it or not? And when we get to learn about our immortality. Can you go there?
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite subjects. The first question is, what is it? What does make it mean? And there is only one answer, and that is, we are eternal, immortal beings, and there is no making it, because whether you survive or not the physical journey, you go on to the next location, the next vibration, the next experience. Could be another planet, could be another earthly incarnation, or it could be advancing into a higher dimensional reality. So once you really get the fact, and this is the clue in my personal experience, the clue to the ultimate clue to spiritual enlightenment is understanding that you don't die. If you do get that, and I do, you can't be afraid. There's nothing to be afraid of. How can you possibly be afraid of death if you truly understand that once the body, becomes defunct. The spirit exits, goes through the tunnel, as most people have described it, and into another scene, another experience where people who have passed before you await. And this has been so verified by so many people. It can't be that millions of people have had a common experience, and they're all delusional, right?
Absolutely.
So most of the near-death people describe going to this tunnel, seeing many of them see people that they love, and they're told, no, they've got to go back. It's not time yet. And they come back into their bodies unwillingly because it's so beautiful where they are. So once we get this concept of our immortality, personally, I feel very excited about the next step. And some people say, please, Patricia, don't say that. We want you to stay here. I don't have any intention of leaving anytime soon, but I am excited to experience that next step. And just one of many up the light ascension ladder or spiral of existence.
Absolutely. And my mother, Juliet Nightingale, who likewise had a show on BBS and was a multiple near-death experiencer, was entrenched in this understanding. And I never realized how valuable it was until I actually faced her and another close friend of mine leaving their bodies and realizing that from first-hand experience, that the consciousness does in fact live on. And there is no death other than the body itself, which has basically completed its purpose as a vessel for that soul being. And that, to me, is not something I feel like I could tell anybody other than I can share my experience, but it's one of those things that you have to know yourself.
Yes.
You know, you have to go there yourself. You have to feel those feelings, what that is for you and how that rocks your boat, because it rocks your boat. There's no choice about that.
It completely changes your experience in life. And there, like you said, because I talk about this a lot, and people ask me they want to be convinced. And I always say, there is no way you can be convinced by anyone else explaining this to you. It was only when it happened to me, when I went out of my body and saw myself lying in the bed and was just as physical in that experience out of body as I was in the bed. I experienced myself completely awake, completely three-dimensional, and yet my 3D body was lying on the bed. And this wasn't just a dream. This was very, very vivid experience. And once you have this understanding or this experience of being in that other, whatever that is, other dimension or parallel reality, you simply don't, you can't fear it anymore, because you know that you exist on many levels and on many planes and possibly in many universes, which is something I like to discuss as well.
Absolutely.
Exist simultaneously in parallel universes, which is different than multi-dimensions. Isn't it exciting?
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah. It is the essence of life. And it is also, I believe, the prowess of the human experience. That is the gift inherent in our beautiful, beautiful minds, that we can go there, that we can expand and explore and enjoy and have all the experiences, sensations that go with that. I really believe that in coming home to our true humanity, these are the doors that await our exploration. This right here, it's so not about this body. It's so about the way that we can be part of the entire universe. This is a gift. This life is such a gift. So that is really beautiful. I would love to have a much longer conversation about that with you sometime. Perhaps you consider coming back for that, because I feel like as people, are facing their life as they've known it, basically their ego selves in all of their constructs of the perfect controlled thing that they always thought they were controlling, not controllable anymore, that is in itself a death experience. That is a death process. And I feel that so many people are facing those huge lessons, perhaps for the first time on many levels, that learning how to become courageous is really helpful. And listening to you, listening to others who have been there, it really can help people so much at this time face the fact that, well, all right, your little world isn't working out the way you wanted, but there's another one. There's another way. And you can find that in your joy, in your heart. You know, I really appreciate that we've ended up here. I'm not so surprised. So tell us a bit how we can find you. We're coming, you know, up to our hour. I want to make sure that you offer us all of your contact information and things like that.
Okay. Well, at the beginning you said, welcome, Patricia, but you didn't say my last name. So if anybody has to figure it out, I'm Patricia Corey, and I'm known for the books, The Syrian Revelations, which is kind of a generic description of the many books that I've brought out. My website is www.syrianrevelations.net. I'm also pretty available if you look on the internet. There's quite a number of videos and interviews that I've done on YouTube, and that will help you get more familiar with, you know, what kind of gal I am out here trying to help people find their truth and their power and their joy. So please don't hesitate to contact me, and hopefully you'll read the books as well, which I believe are some of the best empowerment tools that we have at this time on the planet.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So I guess we will move toward wrapping it up now, and I will offer back to you, Patricia. Those were some really lovely closing notes. And would you like to offer any more closing notes?
Yes, I would like to say to everyone, please, please, please do something. Take action on something that is important to you, whether it's helping the whales and dolphins or the turtles or children in Africa or petitioning the government. Please get off of your assets. Something, even a $5 donation to an organization that you believe is doing good work. Do something. Write that letter. Be an activist and be fearless. Don't be afraid to put your name on a list for something you believe in. Otherwise, there will be no change. There will be no change on this planet. So get off of your assets. Believe in yourself and the power of even one voice, and help free the world and bring the light back. As you said, the beautiful thing that you said, bring the joy back into the lives of people.
Oh, thank you so much, Patricia. Yay. And there's a simple thing you can do. I'll share this really quick story because it really fits with doing something. On the train the other night coming home, really quickly, a woman was sitting on the train, and a couple got on the train, were carrying a pizza and something on top, and the woman reached out her arms, and she said, "I'm hungry, I'm hungry." And the couple walked by, and the man who was carrying the pizza turned to her without skipping a beat and handed it to her.
Yay.
That was it.
I have a quick story, too. I know we're at the end, but a similar thing. I was at a grocery store recently, and there was this little old woman in front of me. And she had a little change purse, and she had a bag of flour and a bag of potatoes. And she was reaching into her coin purse, and the clerk said, "That's not enough. The price is whatever." And she said, And this woman was very impatient with her, and I signaled her from behind that I would cover the difference.
Mm.
I'm not trying to be a hero here, but I wanted her to understand that this woman was all she had. Please don't take away her dignity. So I gave her the signal, and the woman was trying as best as she can to cover the fact that she didn't have enough. And the woman said, the clerk said, I'm sorry, it's my mistake. And she smiled, said, that's good. And she walked out. That's all she walked out with, flour and potatoes. Okay? Wow. And this clerk couldn't cover 30 cents.
Wow.
Whatever the difference was, let's get back to taking that step, handing that hungry person. If somebody says to you, I'm hungry, for God's sakes, reach out.
Yeah. That's all it takes.
Yeah.
That's all it takes, Patricia, and we will get there. And it's a joy. We are learning, and there, you know, some days are great, some days are, you know, big learning days, and they don't feel so great, but they're all great because we all get to do this together. We're all going to do this together.
A whole great spirit.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your good work as well, and I'm very grateful to have been a guest on your show, and I would love to come back and go delve into that question with you if you'd like. Sometime down the road.
That would be an absolute pleasure, and we'll make that happen at some point. And thank you again, Patricia Corey, for joining us here on the Alchemy of Light broadcast. We are, signing off. I'm Jamil Graham, your host, and I thank you all so much for joining us and for doing your part, making the world a better place. Until next time. Take good care of yourselves and take good care of each other. Bye-bye.